In a world where Togu fans are easy and the wrong figure arts are released for retail, three man children stand not quite shoulder to shoulder with their trusty spray can at their side, united across timelines and space against the congealed, grimdark 90s inspired hordes. Shuku and Shinobi, Dossum Rider, Jedi Mon, Aerosol. Their mission, to bring you the latest Togu news in the craziest way possible. Riders, Rangers, and Rambles Season 4. If you don't listen to this show, you don't know anything about Tokusatsu.
Hello and welcome to our Season 4, Episode 51.
The Gaim Traveler's Wife. Just because it's a Gaim pun. That's the only reason that was this week's episode title. It has nothing to do with anything that happened in any of the shows. I just thought of it one day this week and I was like, hey, wait till Aerosol hears this one.
Why this?
So, like, somewhere right now, Aerosol's hearing this, and he's just going, oh my god, and facepalming, I imagine. And it was worth it, because I can sense that right now.
That's virtually what I'm doing right now.
But it was worth it, because I suppose I could have thought of something that happened with it this week. I'm like, well, this will be fun. And who knows when we'll have...
Thunderstorm.
What thunderstorm?
The one that I was expecting, like, for most of the day, because it was all gloomy and cloudy and shit.
Oh. I was like, wait, what does this have to do with the Gaim Traveler's Wife? It's not the Gaim Traveler's Thunderstorm.
It could be, you don't know.
Starring Rachel McAdams and Gaim.
You don't know his Gaim.
Oh, classic.
I don't know, I'm bad at puns. Anyway.
One ups.
Yeah, so I'm in the midst of like multiple different boxes right now.
Box fort right now.
No. Let's see. A couple days ago, I got my first CS Toys box, which was pretty much all Gaim toys. The Lock Seeds, a Daidai Maru, because I felt like picking it one up finally.
So you can make a giant orange sword.
And it was totally worth it. Like, the toy itself is kind of eh, because it's fairly small, but when you combine it with the Musou Saber, it's kind of neat. And then when you combine that with the DJ gun, it's just really fucking cool.
Yeah, it is pretty cool looking.
So I can safely say that on its own, it's kind of crappy, but given what we have out now, the Daidai Maru is definitely a worthy pickup.
So you can do the review and be like, on its own, don't pick it up, but if you're willing to spend $100 more to make this really long, then go for it.
So that was cool. What else was in there? Metallic Red Russia was in there. The Shocker Combat Man Lockseed was in there. That's annoying. I think that was it. Oh, AC 11. Kachidoki was in there, who's amazing.
Kachidoki.
Kevin was right. It is a puzzle, and the worst kind of puzzle.
The Rubik's Cube.
Once you figure out how to do it, it's fairly easy, but it's like that initial transformation back into the fruit mode that you just kind of, you're at a loss, you don't know what you're doing. So that was really awful. I actually had to go back and watch one of the Japanese reviewers that I'm subscribed to on YouTube to figure out how to do it. Watch him do it. So that's cool. So that review's popping up next week. Today I would have my Diesel Russia and the Go Busters and Kyoryuger Russia. But despite being, you know, EMS, it's all like Express and shit. Despite that, and despite being at my home until 1 o'clock in the afternoon, they still decided not to. So the time I need them to be quick, they aren't. The time I don't really care when they get here, they decide to knock on my door at 11 in the morning.
That's how it works.
So that was kind of irritating. But so I have to go pick that up tomorrow. There's a Mandrake box on the way. Nothing of real importance in there that anyone would really care about. If one of my friends is listening to this, he knows what's in there. So
yes,
there's a GBK towel in there.
I know that you just kidding.
No, it's not Steve.
Well, I like his name because it's really generic. Sorry.
Hi, Steve. You've never actually been mentioned. Now you have. But there's a towel in there. That's a hibiki towel.
Like a bath towel?
I think it's more of a kind of like a washcloth kind of size, I think, because it was only 800 yen. I can't imagine it being a huge beach towel or anything. But
I like the idea of having that, so you can bring it to Morphicon and we just go to the beach with a hibiki towel. I think you should still bring the washcloth as like your own custom towels.
Heck
for
yeah. In the bathroom and shit. That'd be really cool. I don't know. I needed a little bit of package filler, and I just seen it's like your bridges. I just seen this. I'm like, I need this. It's stupid.
It can create fun, dumb purchases.
In that box, I also have the Rider Goods Collection book for New Deno and Decade. That was the only one I didn't have. So now I have all the Detail of Heroes books and all the Rider Goods Collection books. So I'm sad about that.
Yeah,
I'm sad about that. That's a phrase. Anyway, I think that's it in terms of stuff that will be here or is on its way. I haven't really made any, like, not import purchases outside of some Lego sets, because I was at the Lego Fest with Jeff on Sunday, and so now I'm on this, like, huge Lego kick.
He's taking pictures with princesses and stuff.
Yeah,
disturbing children.
Like that picture of me in the carriage might as well just be called "Bitch, I'm Fat Fat." So yeah, I've been buying Legos a lot lately. That's about it. I found the Power Ranger figures, the Legend ones. I reviewed those. That's fun. But with finding those, there really isn't anything else I'm looking for. So I'm back to not really needing to find anything. So now I'm binge purchasing Legos because I don't have anything else to buy.
Just like meandering around.
Like we went to Target today, me and my mom, and like there was not. I just looked around and I'm like, I'll just buy this. I grabbed a $10 Lego set. That's about it.
My turn?
Yep.
Yay! I have so much to say. Not really. Let's see. What have I done? Well, I paid for my AmiAmi box, finally. There was a bit of a mix-up, because all that's in it is the two Sentai Resha and Achilles' Deed and something else. I can't remember. There's, another thing in it that came out. I'm trying to think what it is now, and I'm losing it. But anyway, it was sent, the payment request for EMS, and I was like, I really don't need this stuff that quickly. I'll just make it sell. And then I did sell, and it was only like $5 cheaper. So I'm like, you know what? I'll just do EMS. And usually that's happened to me a couple times. And then
that just happened to me with that Mandrake box. I set it to sell because I'm like, I don't really need anything in here right away. So I'm like, I'll do sell. And then like I got the sell message back, and it's like, oh, shipping's like 3,500 or something because they have to do two boxes. I'm like, well, if they have to do two boxes, I'm like, well, what's the EMS and DHL? They're like, EMS is like 4,800, and DHL is like 3,000. I'm like, well, just give me DHL.
Yeah, and what happened was that this has happened to me a couple times where I would change it to sell in their thing, and then I would see that it wasn't a difference. So then I go in and I would pay the EMS one they sent me, and then they would send it EMS. And I did that, but this time they refunded me because they thought it was a mistake. So I'm just like, fuck it. So it's going sell. It's going sell. And I wanted it to go EMS, so I'm like, oh, I'll just pay this one instead and not do sell, but apparently they decided to not fall asleep at the wheel this time. The one time I don't want them to do their job. That's a thing. I also have a Mandrake box because I finally spotted a Jimba Gaim on there. So I needed to fill out stuff. So I got a, this is like an old school. If the podcast was back during the Kiva days, I got a Sochaku Henshin Arkan Ray set. And, what was the other? An Ankh Loxied I've been trying to purchase for like 3 years. Even though Loxies haven't been out that long. And then my fun purchase was a Gosei wristwatch. It's just a Tensoda wristwatch, but it's Gosei for us. So I just think that would be hilarious to wear around Morphicon. Like, I really hope I get it. So that should be fun. As far as, like, in-person purchases, I have been slowly finding the 5-inch figures. It's been really annoying. This is, like, the first time I've had a a hard time finding them where they break up the wave so much. Like last week on like Friday at my Walmart by my uncle's place, I found SPD Red and Megaforce Red, and that was it. And then meow. And then I just started meowing, hoping that it would solve all my problems. And then, so everywhere else I looked didn't have it. So then I went out with my mom today also because she knows the other side of town. I have no idea. And so I could check Targets and Walmarts I've never seen. Well, I've seen them before, but I can't get there myself. Plus, I'm a terrible driver. I've been to court for it. No. Anyway, what was I saying? Oh, yeah. So then I go to – we were at this one Walmart and I find – one samurai figure. That was all they had. And then I went to this weird Target, which actually looks like that one in California because it's like upstairs and it freaks me out. And they had one Robo Knight. That was it. And I joked when I found the samurai one, I'm like, it'd be funny if we just found one at every single place. And then when I found the Robo Knight by itself, I'm like, I was just kidding. And finally, like at the last place, I found Dino Thunder Red and MMPR Green and Mystic Force Red, but I'm still missing MMPR Red. It's super annoying. It's probably because of Austin St. John's popularity all of a sudden. But so I'm slowly trying to find those. I did go to traffic court last week. That was fun. I had to resist doing any Ethel Beavers did it bits. Thought about doing it like Michael Scott's trial, where when they just asked me something, I would go, line. That didn't work, or it wouldn't have worked. The only thing that was really interesting about that, it actually ended up not being a big deal, was that the judge I got was a really quiet talker, so he was, like, really hard to understand. He was like, and I was like, what? So, that was funny. Let's see, anything else? Oh, I finished Infamous again. I did my evil expert playthrough, so that was really fun because it's a really fun game. It goes a lot quicker when you don't have to get distracted by side missions. And the expert, kind of like Infamous 1 and 2, the expert playthrough isn't really that difficult. Actually, I thought it was a little more difficult on the older games, but even then, obviously, I finished it. So this one seemed even easier because they don't ramp up the difficulty of the enemies, they just give you a little bit less health. Mm-hmm. And in this game, you can get away so quick that it's not that big a deal. So, and then I platinumed it out, and I've never gotten a platinum on a game before because they're usually like a ridiculous amount of achievements, but this one was so easy. Like, play Duck Duck Deuce with 10 people and like cross the street. I'm like, I can do this. Most difficult part was hunting down like the musicians and stuff. So I had to do it on my good file because they run from you in terror. Like, they can hear your smoke mist like a mile away and then they just disappear off the map.
Yeah, all the teleporting powers now.
And I don't think much else. I finally started Skylanders now that that's done. I'm still on Samurai. I'm almost done with first half of Samurai. I kind of had to take a break for a few days because I was busy. But I did finish Orange is the New Black, and that's really fun. But I think that's it for me. If anyone's curious about Aerosol's 1-ups, about 7 hours ago he got pizza. But interesting fact about that is when you see him later, he will have not eaten that pizza yet. And he might not even know that he's going to have that pizza. So just like whenever he's making a really eloquent point about Gaim, just think, this guy doesn't even know he's about to get lucky with pizza. So just think about that.
I like the term get lucky with pizza.
Exactly. That's how I take getting lucky to mean. You're going to get lucky tonight. Pizza? What kind?
There's a small chance that Kevin has possibly made one or two more Mandarake orders within the span of the week.
Are they AC and WAPs?
WAPs.
WAPs? WAPs?
Possibly. What, I don't know.
The other ones? FMCs? YMCAs? I don't remember all the ones.
And oh, that's funny. Stuff.
Now it's time for the nudes.
Or lack thereof.
There's a little bit. There's more than usual. JDF didn't do anything this week, so sorry.
No, he called the gambling hotline.
Oh, yeah.
That's not like a whole lot to talk about, but I still think it's funny.
He's like, we can help you. Do you want to bet? Like I mentioned before, the most interesting thing about that to me is the same thing that was interesting about the peppers, is like the train of thought that went through. Like, he sat there and thought, hey, I should prank call a gambling hotline. I just want to know, like, what the thought process was behind that. I still think the most interesting one is the peppers, because he was just grocery shopping, and he thought a way to relate it to himself and the Green Ranger. So
at some point within the past couple days, I don't know when it was, but he's like, saw this outside of the office or whatever, and it was just a green lizard on the wall.
I think he just goes through places, like, quickly taking pictures, like, green, yeah! Everything green reminds him of the Green Ranger. I did see a funny post today. I almost posted an actual JDF tweet thing where it was he was like using the reflection of his watch on the wall, and he's like, "I'm making the universe with my watch." Yeah,
that was the post. Making the universe.
Yeah, because it looked like planets or something. I don't know, but that's what it said. He said, "Making the universe with my watch." Yeah, really bored. Oh, JDF. Wow.
That's a. Wow.
Yeah. So, nothing major this week, but, you know, there can always be some entertainment found on his feed. And it is funny when you see something and then you want to go back and look at it or show someone, and you go to look at it, and then you have to sift through, like, 20,000 posts he's made since then, and that was only an hour ago.
It's really bad, like, there's just, you go to, like, the Facebook, and it, like, feeds in everything from Instagram, and it's just, like, within the span of 2 hours, it's like, there's like 12 posts.
I know.
Like, oh, did you see that post? Oh, no, you should go check it out. You can't, because it's gone.
It's already buried as if it's been a year on its timeline.
Because, yeah, it was the other week, and Jeff hadn't seen the Pepper tweet. So I'm like, okay, well, we have to go find it. And it literally took us like a half hour to find it because of all this shit.
I think Aerosol said the same thing, that he was trying to find it, and that was even shorter afterwards. It's pretty ridiculous. Oh, JDF. Because he, like, updates every second of his life. It's, like, insane. Driving to work, yeah. At work, yeah. Walking in the door, yeah. Just breathed, yeah.
Just pooped, yeah.
Just sign a $10 bill. That's a felony, yeah. I'm turning you in, yeah. Just call the police. Hello, cops? Jason David Frank has signed a $10 bill, and I think this is almost worse than the Batman shooting. We should call it up. Uh-oh. No JDF. Well, we did find some stuff to talk about. But there hasn't been any major controversies this week that have had people, like, freaking out or anything that I can think of.
No.
What else is in the news? We got some information about the Guy movie and stuff, and the unfortunate Guy Kikaider crossover is actually going to be a thing. Which is super annoying. Like, I thought being Kikaider were going to be okay. I was like, you know what? I'm going to check out your reboot, which for whatever reason you have to spell in all caps.
Like, reboot.
When people say, like our Facebook page. Dude, I can read like. It doesn't need to be capitalized. But, like, I was going to check it out. I'm like, this looks kind of okay. I'll give it a chance, be a little open-minded. And then he goes and does this on me. Why you got to do me like that, bro? You and your half face. You can't decide what color you want your face to be. So, man. I think what's most annoying about it is that it takes away from Gaim episodes.
Yeah.
Which was part of what was annoying about Gaiven? Gaiven. It's like if Ivan became Gaim. Anyway. Damn it. I can't say things today. If Gavin... What? That wasn't even the right sentence. That was what was annoying about the Gavin crossover is that we liked GoBusters so much that it was annoying that it was taking away from episodes. And I feel like this one's even more annoying because we've already had... I mean, sure, it was only one episode, but we already had an episode taken away. And Gaim has just so much I want to learn about that I hate the time is being taken away for stupid stuff like this. So it's really annoying to me. Beyond just the whole I don't like crossovers anymore thing, it's just annoying to have part of my show taken away.
Like, the only way I can deem it okay is if, like, it's just a normal episode, and then suddenly he's just there and gone.
Like in when he appeared in Let's Go Kamen Rider?
Yes,
like when they just cut away to the quarry, he just poses, and then it's over.
But it sounds like it's going to be part of the episode because Gaim's fighting Hikaider or whatever. So
can't they go into Tokyo Drift? I don't care if we miss episodes of that.
In fact, it would probably make it better.
It would. Like, I guess tonally, it makes a little more sense. Tonally! It makes a little more sense, I guess, to put it in Gaim. But I would rather be in Tokyo Drift because right now, we're so early on, really nothing has happened, so I could care less if they had an episode or two or whatever that was gone out of their story time. It makes it sound like children, but I guess it is. But it just bothers me with that. It would be totally different also if it was like not part of the show. Like if the show aired normally and this was like some sort of 30-minute or 1-hour special that was like outside of the production order of episodes. Mm-hmm. But why couldn't Kaider got canceled because of soccer? I don't even think that's a real thing anymore. I think they just canceled soccer for Gaim. I don't know what happened. I don't follow it. But it's just annoying.
I haven't heard anything lately. Like, that entire discussion died down.
I think the last thing I heard was that the most is we might miss a week. But that was the last thing I heard, and it might not even be that. And that was quite a while ago. That was maybe a week or two ago that I heard anything. But I just kind of wish this little thing didn't exist. But luckily, we have the amazing, completely overhauled design of the Kurokage Shin suit. I mean, they went right in there. They just torched the old suit and then rebuilt it exactly the way it was, but with a new belt.
It's really annoying.
Like, yeah. I don't even know why it has to exist.
I don't know.
Because I think, you know, the whole point of new writers and movies or Rangers or whatever in general, or new Rambles, I don't know, but it's to generate excitement for the movie or the episode or the toy. But this isn't anything exciting. Like, I wouldn't have necessarily minded the idea, I think, like you mentioned on Twitter, of like a super Kurokage that led them. Like, he was a Hidiak and the other ones were Stixoids. I don't know why I picked them instead of like Crybots, but that would have been kind of neat.
Yeah, like, I get that and I would be okay with that. Like, just make it like the Zangetsu Shin transition and make it identifiable as the same, but you could just give him new, like, parts.
It's kind of like G3 and G3X is sort of what I see Zangetsu as.
Like, no, it's just the same fucking suit, just with a Genesis driver, and they bother to make a Matsubokuri Energy lock seed.
I would have much rather they put their efforts into doing a banana energy arms, just because I'm curious.
Yeah. But
it's kind of one of those things where if I didn't collect, I mean, obviously I do collect, and even though I do collect, I still have this curiosity as I'd love to see like a design of what everyone would look like if they got a energy rider counterpart, just out of curiosity. But yeah, they should have done something different. I can't remember anything else from those scans or the news, because all I remember from that day was not upgraded Kurokage and the Kikaider reboot. Was there anything else in that information?
There really wasn't anything else noteworthy in any of the scans. They teased three new riders, maybe three new arms. It's hard to really tell with the show.
Three new something.
So there's three new whatevers in the movie. Don't know what they are, but there's that at least. But yeah, that was really about it. We haven't seen anything. Next month we should be getting a glimpse of Kiwami arms, and hopefully find out what those three mystery whatevers are for the movie.
Yay, mystery whatevers!
Next month's scans are probably going to be more informative than this month.
Yeah, I don't think there was any other real Toku news around this week. In non-Toku news, they announced a new Skylanders game. Did we talk about that already?
No, we didn't.
Oh. Okay.
Here I am sitting here going, I don't know if I'm going to get the next game.
Because money.
I'm sucking up my money and stuff, and I don't know, I barely had a chance to play Swap Force because it came out at a really unfortunate time. But sure enough, they make this new gimmick where there's a new portal with these crystals, and you put the crystal on there and it captures the bad guy. And then when you put the crystal back on there, it'll summon the bad guy and it'll go beat shit up for you. I'm like, damn, that's cool.
Yeah.
And so now I'm back in.
Yeah, it's... I'm actually pretty impressed at how innovative they've been the past 2 years with, you know, maybe being an annual now. Mm-hmm. Like, Giants, I liked Giants okay, but... And, like, the designs were cool, but it was a really basic idea. Like, you just had a big Skylander that could wreck shit. So it wasn't anything huge, but the Swap Force thing is actually really neat because there's so many combinations of powers, and I mean, it can be kind of annoying, you know, when you need to go through different gates for completion, but just in terms of messing around to sort of customize the way you play is actually really cool. Yeah. And the whole trap idea, I mean, the sort of, you know, capturing villains and using them for yourself isn't a new game idea, but the way they're presenting it is pretty neat. And it's a good way to make use of their sort of gimmick. And then, obviously, there's going to be new Skylanders. And there's a damn, like, what was it? Not Avocado Skylander. Is it? Or is it a... those things where it's like a leaf and it's like barely... You can have a hard time getting food off of it.
I don't know, but he shoots tomatoes.
Yeah, he's like a vegetable Skylander, which is pretty awesome. He's like the Gaim of Skylanders.
Gaimlander.
Artichoke! There we go. But yeah, it looks pretty neat, and I was going through the same thing where I was like, I don't know if I'll get it this year, but then it's like, but then all these years, I have this huge Skylanders collection now, and it will have been for nothing if I stop, so I'm like indentured to this forever now, because yeah. Every year I'll be like, I can't give up, I've come so far.
That's basically how I feel too.
It'll just be me in 10 years sobbing, surrounded by a bunch of Skylanders. Choose your Skylander, choose your Skylander. No more!
Like, I would legitimately have to sell my Skylanders in order to stop.
Yeah.
Like, I can't just go, I'm not going to buy this game. Like, then I would just have, like, these 3 games worth of Skylanders sitting here staring at me.
Yeah. I mean, they're cool figures, too, and, I like you said, I'd love to display them. I don't have any place for them right now, though.
Yeah.
Because they look really awesome, and then part of me was thinking, also, I have all these boxes for them, then they'll be empty, so I might try to do, like, a display favorites or something at some point. I don't know, but they're really cool figures. I really like them, just obviously. I wouldn't be buying them.
Right. And, I mean, the same thing goes for Disney Infinity.
Yeah, they announced 2.0 with
there
Marvel.
There was a little conference, and like you just said, they announced a 2.0 game. And the big thing about the 2.0 game is the introduction of Marvel superheroes. So you're going to have the new starter set that comes with Black Widow, Thor, and Iron Man. And then they announced Hawkeye, Hulk, Captain America.
All the Avengers.
I think basically all the main characters from the Avengers movies. In the footage, there was a couple other people. There was Winter Soldier, Iron Patriot, MODOK, and Loki.
I still prefer War Machine.
Yeah.
Iron Patriot's way cooler! No, it's not.
But the thing about Disney Infinity is that I was really stoked about it. And then once more information came out about it, and then I played it, I just lost interest. But the thing about that is that I'm such a big Disney fan that I love the figures. Because for the $10 to $12, depending on where you get it and if you get it on sale and stuff, they're actually really nicely sculpted figures.
Yeah, they are.
And so the Disney fan in me wants the figures regardless. And that's basically where I'm at with the next Disney Infinity game, is because they changed a lot, but not enough to make me want it. Because they still have those limitations of you can only play these people in this game. And when you have the cast of the Avengers, that's not so much a big deal, because I'd probably want to play as the Avengers anyway.
But how awesome would it be to take like Captain America and just like wreck shit at Andy's house?
Exactly. That is my point there, And the whole toy box thing was never a big thing to me, because I just don't like that concept. I understand the people who do, and I understand where it can be fun, but my mentality really is that I'm sitting here playing a game, I don't want to build anything, I want to play. So
I don't want to have to do work.
Basically. So I get it. I get the concept, and I get where kids would probably really enjoy it, especially if they're like the creative kind of kids. But it's basically the point where I would prefer it if Disney Infinity was built like Skylanders and had a story mode that brought all these characters together. But it doesn't, so I don't really plan on picking up Infinity 2, but I do want to get all the figures still.
And like I said yesterday, even it would be neat if like you could only play in their own worlds, but then after you beat it, you can go back and do like a new game plus, but with anybody. Like you could go in their world and play with anybody, because it's just like a fun idea. That's kind of
right.
The fun of it. They said Infinity, the possibilities are not infinite. But I haven't even gotten a chance to play my copy of Infinity yet, so I'll see how I like the game. That'll determine if I pick up the second game, but I'll probably pick up some of the figures. We'll see. Probably introduce Star Wars people for 3.0.
Unlikely. They showed Rapunzel with a lightsaber, so.
Oh, that's cool. They also have a Lola power disc, Lola from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah.
Coulson's car. But speaking of Star Wars, they also announced the new Star Wars cast and the old Star Wars cast too. So that's exciting. I'm pretty excited.
Everyone's flipping a shit because there's no boobs.
I know, they're like, it's like, is this a thing everywhere?
It is. You know how the McDonald's toys right now, they're doing Spider-Man.
Uh-huh.
And they got, like, the boy Spider-Man toys and the girl Spider-Man toys.
Yeah, I actually thought that was kind of neat because usually they have a completely different franchise.
People are flipping out about that.
Oh my god.
Because it's sexist that they took the same franchise and split it like that.
People, stop. Stop. It's so unimportant.
Because it is promoting the idea of gender bias toys. And it's promoting the wrong. I don't know. I don't get it.
McDonald's has always done that, though. I mean, like I said, I actually saw that the other day, and I was thinking, that's actually really clever, because usually they'll have, like, a completely separate thing. Like, right now they would have Spider-Man for boys and, like, Hello Kitty for girls. Mm-hmm. But then if they just did Spider-Man, like, the generic boy ones, then they would complain, why isn't there any options for girls? God, it's, like, a thing everywhere. I'm like, beyond the Power Rangers fandom, people are complaining about this stuff. It doesn't matter. It's, like, so stupid. God.
Like, I saw that article and I was like, holy crap, it's everywhere.
And I didn't even realize it.
I can't deal with it. It won't go away.
It's so dumb. And then it's funny because out of the new cast members, the only person I knew of was the guy that played Smeagol in Lord of the Rings. And I didn't even know his name. I just knew from what I heard online that he was going to be in it, but everyone else is like flipping out. I don't recognize any of these people. I'm like, oh no, it's the guy with the face. They picked him. I can't believe it. They did that. It's like, I'm trying to fit in. Like, I can't believe they picked that person, but I've never heard of any of them, which I think is a good thing.
One of the guys was one of the Weasleys in Harry Potter.
Oh, well, that doesn't count. It don't count. I don't know, but still, it's like, people are flipping out. I'm like, I really haven't heard of any of these people. Like, but I'm excited for it. I think it's kind of neat they're bringing back the old cast, just even if it's just for the first movie to sort of pass the torch. I still think it's kind of cool, even though they're kind of old now. But
kind of.
Just like, I'm just so curious to see how they do it. And people are freaking out because they like threw out the expanded universe. But I'm kind of happy because it makes people upset. Which makes me happy, but I like that they're not restricted to anything that's already been written.
Right.
That, like, most, you know, like, because people never think about that they have to think about the mainstream audience, too. Because there's people that are huge fans of the movies that don't venture outside of it. Kind of like with comic book movies, and they're like, well, why didn't they do this from the comics? Like, you have to realize they're also marketing towards, like, normal people. Oh, people. Anyway, but there's been more non-Toku News week than Toku News.
Sexism.
It's everywhere, man. It's like the important stuff has been done. Women have rights. Can we stop talking about the toys now? God. It's so dumb. It's like they ran out of issues. Everything's fine now. So they're just talking about stupid stuff like the toys. I got a comment on my Shogun Megazord review that, based on the pink recolor, said, I remember when PR used to be a unisex show. I'm like, oh, come on. That was a dumb mistake with the pink. Like, it's kind of neat now to have an alternate color, but at the time, why? It was like, kind of dumb. It was Tommy's sword, and he was popular.
Well, they made it pink because there was already the Falcon. And they were heavily promoting the fact that the Falcon combined with it.
But it still could in the show. I mean, I don't know.
I mean, I don't get it either.
I don't think it's something that would be done now.
Oh, no.
I agree about the sexism thing, but back then I think that they tried to do a few more things for girls in terms of direct marketing to them, but obviously it didn't sell well, and it's just a business decision that they decided to focus it. Like, now they wouldn't do that. It's the same as why we don't get all the cycles or all the whatever for everybody, because they know what sells. So I don't think that would be a decision that would be made now. I mean, I said in the review, I'm like, now knowing that I can get Mutoki Shogun and have this, it's kind of neat to have like an alternate color. But if you just want to buy that, it's really dumb. But I didn't question it as a kid, which is really funny. It's just kind of like you don't question any of the stuff. Even now, it also makes sense to me, the whole hybrid thing. My son's like, that makes total sense. You know, Ninja Dinosaur.
I don't think I really questioned it when I was younger, because I always just figured they did it because there was already a Falcon and he was white. So they wanted something to be pink, and so I was like, okay.
I
never noticed. I don't know me back then.
I didn't even know me. I never met me. But I didn't question it because I was dumb. I just blindly believed things. It's kind of like the stuff people complain about now that, like, if we could talk to, like, kids now when they're our age, they're going to think that the Silver Ranger suit standing next to the Ghost Ranger suits is a completely normal thing, and the transition and them transforming from the Ghost Ranger suits to the Gokaiger suits makes complete sense in their heads. Mm-hmm. I can guarantee that. Because when you think about how crazy MMPR was, I mean, if that were to happen now, we'd be like, whoa. But it still makes sense in my head that all those Zords belong to the G-Ranger suits and one Die-Ranger suit. And it seems funny that I didn't question that. Oh, the five dinosaur team, well, prehistoric creature team, is going to be joined by a tiger. That makes sense. Oh, Power Rangers. You crazy son of a bitch. There could be a Burt Macklin Disney Infinity figure. Sorry, I forgot to mention that. But that'd be pretty awesome.
Rocket Raccoon and Groot were in the videos.
I assume they'll make him just because he's one of the main guys. So, I mean, I might get the game just so I can say I played as Burt Macklin. Be amazing. Where's brother Kip Hackman?
Why does it have to?
Damn it, Kyle! If you say one more word, I'm gonna lose it. Anyway, speaking of Kyle, now it's time for
everyone's gone.
Everyone's gone. Wait, now it's time for guys.
Superhero time. That's with all Kyle. You're getting from me.
Oh,
so.
Okay, we'll pick up somebody along the way who hasn't had pizza yet. But so Tokuger this week was pretty much generic as usual. My favorite part of the whole episode was probably the very beginning when Tokati was waving to the train and the kid didn't see it, so he just looked like an idiot. Just because it's a funny concept, and like Tokati's kind of got that whole funny facial expression humor thing, and just he's like, I'm waving to my friends on that rainbow train, and like I want to do that now. Where, like, I go to, like, an empty train track or, like, the light rail, and I'm waving. And people are like, dude, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm waving at my friends on the rainbow train. Imagination! And then run away like a box like Mike does. It'll make it funnier. How does he do that? I wanted to show me. Marfcon, how do you run like a box? It's hilarious. I've never seen anyone run like that. But, yeah, I mean, it wasn't like it was awful. My eyes weren't bleeding. It's just it was a pretty, you know, standard generic Sentai episode, and I just wasn't really that interested. It does look like the plot will pick up next week, though.
Yeah, because in the next episode we have the introduction of the Emperor, and Cho Tokyo is going to make its debut. So yeah. Things sure. always tend to pick up when the first combined form
happens,
shows up, so hopefully it starts to develop a plot or something.
Yeah.
So we shall see. As for this episode, I kind of agree it was all right. I didn't hate it. I found it rather amusing for the most part, but the show continues to be fun to watch, but after that, you're done. Like Gaim's fun to watch, and then after you're sitting there going, oh shit, and you're starting running theories through your head.
Yeah.
And this show, you're just, well, that was fun. What do I do now?
Anything else? Except I don't hate it or anything. It's just, I mentioned to you yesterday that it always happens to unfortunately fall on, I remember I need to watch it right when I want to really watch something else or really do something else. So it seems worse than it is at the time because it's something that's only okay and I'm getting ready to do something I really want to do. But I hope it improves because it's not like I don't hate the characters or anything. I think it's got some cool concepts. Like, they introduced some really cool concepts in the first couple episodes. And I just kind of hope to see some more interesting things, like, because they have a lot of really interesting setups with the way the imagination stuff works and the way that going to different stops works. And I just want them to create a little bit of a plot that sort of keeps me more interested. Because one thing great that Kyoryuger did is that it would take you by surprise and you'd watch like the preview and you'd think it was going to be a dumb filler episode. Yeah. And even if it was a lighter filler episode, usually something would happen either that was important to a character or it would somehow move the plot forward or move a certain side story forward. So that was what was nice with Kyoryuger, is that it kept me looking forward to it every week because you never really knew what would happen, and there was stuff I wanted to see happen later, which is something that GoBusters did great also, is they always sort of advanced the plot, even by a small grain, in each episode.
Right. It's lacking that right now, but yeah. We're only 10 episodes in, so...
True.
It's still got a lot of time for improvement, so we'll see what happens, but... I liked the idea of the shadow in this episode. Basically typing things on himself, willing it into existence, basically.
Yeah.
And I thought the way that Takati combated that with doing his own typing on him was actually really clever. And so I really dig that. And those are the things about this show that I really enjoy, that the fights, because all the shadows are so vastly different, the fights end up being really clever. And with the whole theme of imagination, you're always watching fights that you really wouldn't see in a lot of other Sentais. So I really enjoy that. I just wish it was carrying something more enjoyable than
just the fight
scene.
I did like that they used the change again to their advantage.
Yeah.
Like, it's like they heard us or something, because in the first couple episodes we talked about how, oh, it's a cool concept, but I don't know why it's practical, but they don't necessarily need to showcase it every episode like they've been, but I like the idea of when they use it, it's with purpose. Because it can be useful, it's just plan TJ. Just switching colors would be the same color, I don't know.
Which one's which? Can't tell numbers, apparently.
Nope. Shadow can't count.
Bitch, what's a two?
No, Nego. What did you call me?
Man, yeah. Which one's the Nego? Excuse me?
Oh, that's good.
The Nego. It comes after each go. I think that's derogatory.
No, seriously. It's just, no. You're going to have to go to the principal's office. I don't know why I said principal.
If you left.
You're making me uncomfortable. Go watch 106 in Park. Just kidding. Yeah. That's Tokyuger. But next week should be better. And I'm looking forward to Orange when he finally comes out. That always brings up excitement.
It's a mouthful.
It is. It sounds like Goku it made his name fancy.
I can't wait for the toys to come out, and I can build Tokyo Kyoryugen featuring Denliner. That's a...
Wait, wasn't there was it Avatar? Avatar Roku? Wasn't that right?
Yes.
So it's just like Avatar Roku with a Go.
Basically.
There we go.
Avatar. And also that little, Apple TV, Amazon Fire, whatever box that's called Roku.
Oh, man. They're just ripping off all kinds of stuff. Can't even have any original ideas. Just kidding.
Nuts.
I still love that whenever... In any fandom of any kind, whenever the statement of they're running out of ideas happens, it's usually when a new idea is being implemented.
Mm-hmm.
It's so stupid.
Okay, Tokyo. Man, they're running out of ideas. What?
It's like, but they wouldn't say that if they were using old ideas. Well, I guess they would, but it just seems funny that the idea of them not using stuff they remembered from their childhood or things that they used to do.
Like, if you took, like, the super train from Lightspeed and basically kind of redesigned it a little bit to match the Tokuders and did that, no one would have said anything.
Yeah.
Like, oh, that's cool, but because it's a big, colorful box,
they're running
out of ideas.
And then we got Diesel, the first pancake mech. He was squashed by a house. He's probably got stories to tell about being squashed. But it's just funny that I see that in, like, everything. I see it on, like, Digimon, like, the casual fandom on there, where, like, in reference to the crossing concept, they're running out of ideas. Or Pokemon with Mega Evolution, or any new Pokemon ever. This isn't a Pikachu, they're running out of ideas. Or like the people, pirate theme, they're running out of ideas. We've never used it before. Technically, it's not even a pirate theme for us. It's just a whatever.
It's just a whatever.
That's Gosei's motto. He's like, whatever, man. Gosei don't care. He's going to be on my watch soon, not caring. Poof! Aerosol!
Well, there's no jingle. It's Gaim.
So. I don't know why we'd wait for a jingle. I mean, I guess we all pretty winded from that long Tokuger discussion. I'm sorry for that tirade I went on about something. I'll figure it out. but can't believe that happened. Gaim, things happened this week, and
Gaim was pretty interesting.
Yeah, I mean.
It's
all right. I'm just kidding. You sound like a bunch of
I think that's good. I think we can move on to Pokemon now. Yeah.
I think we've had a satisfying discussion.
But no, I really enjoyed Gaim this week. I like how this series really plays with the perspective of the viewers. We mentioned that a lot with our Michi discussions, but like in this case, it is speaking more towards his brother. Because you look back at the beginning of the series and it's like, okay, well, Michi, we all just kind of thought he'd be this insignificant side character. And then with Takatora, it's like, oh man, he's the Oja of the series. Yeah. He's the badass. He's going to come in and kill everybody. And then you get to this point, it's like, I think Michi's going to kill everyone.
Yeah.
And Takatora, not that bad of a guy.
It's funny because
I
always
pretty cool once you get to know him.
It's funny because I always think about that initial thing, like impression of Michi, because like the initial like description of his character was Gaim's friend that's also on the team, whatever. He's probably like a goofy sidekick that tries to kill you. but yeah, this episode gave us a little more insight into Takatora. I mean, his appearances have probably been the most sparse of the main guys, not quite as sparse as, you know, Greedon and Bravos. But and we kind of slowly learn things about him, and they kind of hinted at the past few weeks that he was, you know, had more of this weight weighing on him about the decision to kill billions of people, and then this episode we sort of got like a confirmation of that, which is makes him pretty interesting, is that he really doesn't want to do this, but he legitimately believes it's the only way, and it appears to be there's some deception on Ryoma's side about that, that there possibly could be another way. I mean, at least make more drivers than he's letting on.
Yeah. Because, I mean, we saw both through the little flashback for him and in the present-day conversation that he had with Ryoma, he has asked numerous times whether or not they can just make more drivers. He wants to make as much as he can to save as many as he can. And a lot of this episode really kind of, I don't want to say redeemed, but I guess made me a little more sympathetic towards Takatora as a character.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just because, like, all throughout the series, it's like I was talking about with the perspective thing, we just kind of see him as a villain, you know?
Yeah.
He's, because for a good chunk of it, he really doesn't say a whole lot or do a whole lot that isn't just ambiguous. And then he's attacking other riders, and the first encounter that we really had with him, he was attacking Coda and stuff like that. And even when we get to the point where it's like, okay, well, he seems to have some sort of regrets about needing to do what, you know, Yggdrasil is doing, but we still kind of saw him as a villain, you know, because he's working for Yggdrasil. He's the guy who Coda's sort of, you know, at head with most of the series. But then we get to here, and it's like he legitimately cares about saving people. He, like, the moment he realized that the Invests were intelligent, he's like, he was all aboard. You know,
yeah,
actually reasoning with them and trying to ration with them.
I like the scene where, like, Zangetsu starts fighting the monster after Kota explains what they are, and he's like, "What are you doing?" He's like, "I'm trying to weaken him so we can capture him. Have you seen Pokemon?" And Kota's like, "Well, all right." Like, he's like, "I was not expecting you to be so cooperative. Let's do this. Let's get our arrows together. Let's sync this up." Like, I like that. Like, he was so surprised. He's like, "Motherfucker's been shooting me all day. Finally, some respect." Oh, man. Yeah, that was really good.
I love that he was cooperative, too. It wasn't this, like, "Well, I don't really know if I can trust you" kind of thing. But he's had enough interaction with Coda to realize, like, this kid's probably not lying.
This kid's on to something.
Yeah.
He found this form that's, like, pretty badass. He just lays down some beats and everything dies. Well, it's true.
But it's funny, like, I was thinking back on this episode, and I kept drawing a bunch of comparisons between the two, between Coda and Takatora. Just for starters, like, the two willingly got themselves into this whole mess. Coda did it to protect Mai and to save his friends and stuff like that, and then Takatora willingly let himself be tested on in order to perfect the system. Then you move on from there. The two have been kept in the dark by the people who they trust the most.
Yeah.
You know, for Coda, it's Michi. For Takatora, it's Ryoma. And both of those people are actually now targeting both Coda and Takatora in order to kill them.
That's pretty similar stories,
it's
except,
the same,
you know,
person.
Like,
Takatora
really
is just further along in the journey. He's been dealing with it longer.
And it really is this thing where they essentially have the same goal. They're trying to accomplish the same thing. It's just when Coda was at an impasse, he had, you know, all of his friends, and he had DJ Sagara to kind of set him on this other course. And then when Takatora was at an impasse, he had Ryoma, who is obviously a backstabbing little shit. So, you know, you can kind of understand between their backgrounds how, you know, two characters with very similar goals could kind of have their paths kind of sway so far from each other.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, this episode also made me think back to some of his previous actions, like before he got Kachidoki. You know, Zangetsu was trying to destroy Coda's hope. And I think at the time, I mean, I think a bit of it was probably because he was so annoyed by Coda, just getting in the way. But I think that he was trying to bring him to that same point that he's at now, where he just felt hopeless about the situation. Because in the flashback, he did seem a bit more hopeful than he is now. Like, after the test, he was, like, going over that, you know, that paperwork Yggdrasil's got, and he just seemed more hopeful about, like, the prospect of saving everyone with drivers. And I think that was kind of, you know, he was sort of more hopeful, like Coda was, and I think it was just showing that he was trying to bring Coda to the same realization that he's at, that there is no other way, there's no hope, this is the only way. And I think he was just kind of annoyed thinking that Coda was ignorant about it, whereas Coda actually just has some new leads.
And yeah, I mean, Takatora is very much a kind of jaded to the whole thing. You know, it's like I said, he didn't really have the benefit of having people to kind of set him on a better path like Coda did. So he's kind of more jaded towards the whole thing, and seeing Coda being so hopeful and everything kind of reminds him of himself,
yeah,
sort of thing. Yeah, I agree.
Let's see what else happened in this. Well, Bravo was back for a little bit, which I thought it was pretty amusing that he stumbled upon Bravo like hungry. And he tries to give him food, but then he thinks it's like a token for hiring. And he's like, I don't have time for this. I just don't have time for your antics. And I just thought that was pretty, it was a pretty funny scene. And then he had his whole in love with Zangetsu thing. But as kind of awkward as he is, I think it would be kind of funny if he sort of became an ally to them, if, or at least Dakota, depending on how long the other alliance lasts.
Yeah.
Considering where he started out.
It's judging by the previews of next week, it's confusing to even speculate where this is going to go.
Yeah, because I thought he was going to lose his memory, and it's kind of hard to tell from all the scenes what's going to happen.
Yeah,
but you know, it's funny that we kind of jump right into Zangetsu and Gaim, but last week ended with the cliffhanger of Michi getting, you know, shooting Gaim, and obviously he survived, because before Michi had a chance to double tap it, Baron stopped him. Kind of like we expected. That actually turned out. The memory thing that I said didn't turn out, but Baron protecting him because of the whole honor thing, he's like, he is annoying, but he's not my enemy. You're just being a little shit.
I do have to say, I am glad that Michi went to check on Coda to make sure the job was done, kind of thing.
Creepy.
Because it's kind of a trope, I guess, that the villain doesn't check to see if the hero is truly dead.
And then he starts monologuing.
But, yeah, I do like that Michi actually went to check and see. And while I mentioned last week that there really wasn't any sort of hesitance, he definitely was shaking in this scene,
yeah,
though he didn't seem, I don't know, that held back by the.
No, because when Baron showed up, he's like, dude, get on this! We're going to get this way out of the way.
Yeah.
He didn't say it like that, but like, he just seemed like it's beneficial to everybody.
I do really like Baron's rationale behind that whole thing, behind protecting Coda, because it's not so much a he's my friend kind of thing. It's you know, he's not my enemy.
Yeah.
And
he also said, you know, I don't respect anyone that shoots the strong in the back.
Yeah. Yeah.
Something said.
That was one of, like, first times that Kaito actually sort of admitted the fact that Kota's strong.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is.
You know, they haven't been interacting as much the last few weeks, with the exception of, like, their little squabbles with overlords. But back when they were starting to work together against Yggdrasil and everything, I got the sense that he was starting to respect Coda a little bit more than he did back when they were both playing the Invest game. Because they did work together for that bit, and with the exception of last week, they haven't been in each other's storylines very much. Because Baron's just been wandering around, leaving books everywhere, while Coda's been pretty busy.
I also that whole scene resulted in two things I thought were really funny. The first being that Kaito was talking to Coda's unconscious body about how he tends to annoy a lot of people, but he never seems to realize when people are annoyed with him. So he obviously didn't realize that Michi wanted him dead. But after that, I love that Coda wakes up in a tree with branches covering him, because that just implies that Kaito just kind of put him in a tree and then left.
And covered him with branches so he doesn't get eaten. Well, it is kind of funny, too, because
I'm just going to put you here, and here's a blanket made out of leaves, and see ya.
I got so wrapped up in you know, Zangetsu and Gaim's interaction in the main plot of the episode, I realized that I don't remember Michi, Gaim ever stopping to ask, hey, who shot me?
He just went about his life. He's like, yeah. Oh shit, I'm in a tree. Like,
it's like he's got many of these drunk knights transforming into an armored rider, waking up in a tree. Oh man, not again. I didn't think about that, because he just kind of fell out of the tree and then started walking and ran into Bravo. Meanwhile, Michi's acting like everything's fine over with Mai. Did you guys work things out? Oh, yeah, we joked around, and then I shot him in the head. And it was like, that was so much fun. You want a juice? I want a juice.
I did like that scene. Michi really didn't have much in this episode, but I do like that scene, because it is kind of Michi finally recognizing that the him that is, you know, the creeper is kind of the real him.
Yeah.
Or at the very least, he's starting to not really see the difference, like, what's the real him and what isn't.
What's a me?
So it's gotten to a point where he's starting to fake being a nice person more so than he is faking the whole intimidation thing. Whereas at the beginning of the series, you kind of got the impression that it was the other way around.
Yeah, because he asks about, like, how should I act? He's like, it's not you to worry about your persona.
But I do find that, like, really interesting, because you look at Takatora, and Takatora is sort of the anti-hero kind of character, where he has the best of intentions, but he's kind of forced to do something that he really doesn't want to do. Something that is, by all means, villainous.
Yeah.
But you see Michi, and a lot of his motivation, while it is, you know, quote-unquote, to protect my friends, it is kind of just selfish.
Yeah.
The whole killing Coda thing was selfish. It really was just him kind of freaking out. So you see him, and it's like a lot of his goals are a little more selfish than the others. And as the series has gone on, it's more that he's more pretending to be a nice person than he is to, you know, pretending to be the evil person, I guess. So it's getting to the point where he's more of like the anti-villain kind of character. Where he's doing nice things to cover up the fact that he's doing bad things.
You know, and he puts a lot of focus on Mai and wanting to protect her in particular, and doesn't seem to care about, you know, all the people that are going to die by signing up for this plan. He only seems to care about Mai. But I also wonder how much of that is also just rationalizing it, because if I remember right, during the very beginnings of the series, when Takatora and Michi would have interactions, it was mainly Takatora talking about how Michi was one day going to be head of the company, and Michi just sort of seemed to want to be his own man and sort of prove himself that he doesn't need that. And so I'm just kind of wondering, like, how, if he's just using Mai in a lot of ways to rationalize sort of trying to become powerful and a puppet master in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
And I'm sure he cares about Mai, but
I definitely agree, though. He does kind of give that impression where at a certain point it's like, well, are you really fighting to protect Mai, or are you just kind of using her as an excuse?
Yeah. He's doing it for him. Also, in this episode, Zangetsu and Gaim kind of reminded me in a way of Ryuki and Knight, where Knight wasn't really a bad person or anything, but you know, he was doing this rider war and he'd been in it longer, kind of like Zangetsu has, and he sort of was more jaded about it and understood what needed to be done, whereas Ryuki was more innocent and kind of looked at things differently. So I just kind of noticed that. It's obviously sort of different circumstances surrounding it, but it's kind of the same thing, and kind of, you know, Zangetsu or Knight developing a begrudging respect for Gaim and Ryuki and sort of warming up to him. Which can be interesting. We'll see where it goes from here. I just think it's interesting how all the allegiances constantly change.
Yeah, I mentioned that on Twitter. Like, seriously, if you had a board with, like, just their pictures on magnets, like in that one episode of Forza,
it would be like the beginning of the double episode.
And you just switched around the alliances at the end of every episode, it would, like, there's very few moments in this series where the alliances actually line up episode to episode.
Yeah.
Like, something always happens to change something, and, like, at the beginning of the show, I would have never anticipated that we would be in a moment where Takatora and Kota are in the same circle.
And Michi's trying to kill everyone.
And Michi's over here with Professor Garo dude. And his team of homicidal maniacs.
Team of lesbians.
He basically was called Sid a lesbian. Thank you.
Yeah, it works.
I can see it. Sid's kind of a lesbian name.
Because if you were just to say, hey, here's Ryuma and his lesbians, and then you show the two of them behind him, you're like, I get it.
I never would have figured that we would be in this situation, and I really dig that. I hope this lasts, because there's always that thought in your mind that Takatora is going to bite it pretty soon, given the fact that he's got four people that want him dead.
Yeah. I think it'll be interesting just to see Michi, like, to react to an alliance between the two. Because Michi's all like, oh yeah, I'm in the know. Everyone's on my team, and Gaim doesn't know what's going on. But then to see the two of them working together, he'd probably be even more annoyed and try to kill him again.
Yeah. So we've got... Michi basically took Takatora's place, in essence. Because I mean, you always had Takatora, Sid, Yoko, and Ryoma. And now Takatora's flying over with Kota, and now Michi's with Ryoma. So... he basically took that slot, and now shit's about to get real.
Meanwhile, Baron's just trying to get a good fight in. He's Goku-ing it up. He's like, I just want to fight strong opponents. He's actually a little more like Vegeta in a way, but that's pretty much his deal. Meanwhile, Greedon's like, I don't even have Bravo around.
He's been gone for days. I don't know what's happening.
So, this week, we actually got a Twitter question that is relevant to Gaim, so I kind of figured, why not kind of fit it in here?
Okay. Got some Gaim
so
for that.
This question is by Muhammad Faiz Daniel, and he says, we are now more than halfway through Gaim, and I wonder, do you think that all of the main and secondary characters of Gaim have gotten progressed equally in terms of their characters? And if so, which character from Gaim do you feel needs more focus before the show ends?
I would say Kota's got the most, but I think everyone in the main circle has gotten a decent amount since the beginning of the series. Like Brian just mentioned, we never would guess where they are now. And based on what we've learned about them, I think that Greedon needs a little more time just because I feel like Bravo, I mean, I guess we can learn a little more about him and see some progression, but Greedon, I feel like we've gotten very little. Mm-hmm. So I kind of want to see what happens with whatever they decide to do with him. But considering Michi was kind of, like we just said, pretending to be nice and now he's his puppet master and Kota was just this unsure of himself ex-dancer and now he's a hero and I think it's been. I think they've done a pretty good job, personally, with the exception of people like Greedon that have kind of fallen through.
Unsure of himself, ex-dancer sounds like the plot to like an R-rated stripper movie.
Oh, hold on, we got a Megazord coming in. Sorry, I just started. I just started really loud. When's it landing? What's the dispatch time?
Now,
anyway, go ahead, you guys.
No, I agree with you. The main circle of characters in the show have really gotten pretty much as close to equal focus as possible. Obviously, Kota's going to be in a situation where he gets a lot more focus than some of the other characters because he's the main character of the show. But I mean, in terms of like Michi, Takatora, Kaito's been alright. I think out of the main circle, Kaito's probably been the lesser of the group, but I feel like he's just a character that really isn't going to get a whole lot of change, so to speak.
I think they developed his place in the situation well.
Right.
Because before he was just kind of like, hey, this is a way to be strong, but now he's sort of realized all the politics of it and sort of took a position of, you know, this is perfect, the strong get strong and the weak die off type of deal.
Yeah. That's actually a really good way of putting it, because Kaido was actually the character I was going to bring up when we got around to my turn. But he hasn't so much developed as a character, because he's kind of this... He's very much a character that's set in his ways. And it's more like what Dawson just said. They've more developed his place in the series as opposed to him actually going through these character-defining moments like Coda and kind of Michi has.
I think a good way to show that how much Gaim has progressed, everybody is looking at the dance teams and how, you know, much of focus it was at the beginning, and now it's way in the background, and whenever we see them, all the dance teams are actually just one group of dance friends. Because I was thinking about that in the Greedon episode a couple weeks back when it shows like everyone from the different teams interacting. It just kind of shows you how much that world has changed. I think they've done a good job, or a better job than a lot of the writer and Toku shows in general, of having it actually feel like forward movement constantly. Like, it doesn't feel like there's that weird middle period where like nothing happens for a long time. It just feels like we're constantly moving at least a little bit everywhere.
It's funny because we should be in that weird middle period.
Yeah.
Right now.
We're in that weird end middle period.
Oh, periods. So bloody.
Oh, God.
Sorry.
I knew it was coming. I knew. Well, it had to have been you. I feel like if Kevin was here, he'd take that bullet.
Yeah. So when Kevin's not here, he's got to be represented in a little way. Just, you know, we owe Kevin that much.
Something we actually haven't brought up on the podcast, we talked about it before we started, was the translation of the Overlord's language. Because this week, last week we really only got revealed like names, but this week we actually had quite a bit of them, like of discussion in that language. One of which was just a single word at the end of a sentence by Demushu, where he was talking about Takatora and Coda being apes and whatnot, and he's like, "You're all going to die, not like us." And then he says the word
humans.
Yeah, the word is humans, which is kind of crazy. It's,
yeah,
you can kind of interpret that in a lot of different ways.
He's interpreted as like he thinks that they're just more evolved, or were they like a human race and he still thinks of them as humans, or were they like superhumans where their noses weren't even there, like Voldemort? Now I'm just getting weird. I don't know why that would make you a superhuman. Like, why would that be the next step in evolution? I don't know. But that is very interesting.
Yeah, because it's like you said, like, it's, does he see himself as a human, but he, like, he isn't anymore or whatever, or, you know, maybe that's how they refer to themselves, kind of thing.
Yeah, because there's so much we don't know about their perspective.
Yeah.
And I look at it, so I mean, there's been so many writer series and all that where humans transform into these creatures and whatnot, but for whatever reason in Gaim, I look at it so differently because of certain things. Like, well, we saw, you know, Hase, a character we know, turn into one. We know Yuya did, and we saw, like, people getting sick with this, and then those, like, weird mouth things. So whenever I see him, it's not like I'm really creeped out, but I get this sort of unsettled feeling just thinking about, like, what happened to their people. And I'm just curious, like, are they, I'm brunches every week, but are they aware of who they were? Do they only know now? And because they also talked about when Gaim was saying he wanted to save their world, and he was like, he kind of like laughed it off at the very idea of it. So it's just very intriguing, especially hearing themselves referring to themselves as humans. That sounded like, allow myself to introduce myself.
I mean, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I just mostly at this point feel, given that line, that they are aware of what they were, and the people in this world were humans, whether they were... See, here's where you could start running into so many weird theories, like the fact that this was like an alternate world or a parallel timeline. Or
Earth 2 is out there. We can't ignore it forever.
A different planet. Like, it's, you don't really know what Helheim is. And so the idea that these are just people is completely valid, but then you also have to realize that they consider themselves humans, and they consider the actual humans just apes. And so you have to try to figure out at that point what their thought process is. Like, why have they been stuck in this kind of form so long that this is what humanity is to them? And so now actual humanity is just like this devolved state, because what Ryoma was saying was that they can use the Helheim to further their evolution, its next stage of evolution. So basically you have these invests that still consider themselves human, but now they've evolved so progressively that you have their mentality that the actual old humans are just damn dirty apes.
Well, and you know, there's also that whole theory about the whole goal of it is the forest will pick one winner from the population of each place it takes over to essentially become an overlord. Mm-hmm. And then you got to wonder, what if the overlords, you know, they were the winners, so they're probably ruthless. And what if, like, Baron became one of these? And I could see Baron, if he won whatever this is and became an invest overlord, I could see him sort of behaving like that and calling weaklings out and calling them apes. Mm-hmm. So you got to wonder, were these the champions of their race that happened to win? Curious, like, what they think of how this human race has used it to make armored suits. Like, I wonder how they dealt with it. Did they just, like, sword fight? Like, have a giant, like, drive-by fist fight? did they play some chess? Like, it was a really nerdy race that, like, didn't like fighting? Dual monsters? We don't know. Like, I'm so curious. Like, I want one of those giant nerd Bibles for this show that I can just sit there and read. I got to know.
Something I actually have to keep reminding myself of is that the overlords are actually still a relatively new thing in game.
Yeah.
We're so used to having, you know, sentient, intelligent villains in Kamen Rider. It's not really a commonplace not to have at least a few. So we get to game and it's like, for so long we've just had these mindless invests, and it gets to this point where these characters are now finding out that some of the invests are intelligent. It's like, what the hell is going on?
Yeah, because Angustu goes, it can talk? Like, the fuck? Learn English, you're in America, Japan, fuck. Sometimes I forget. But we talked about that quite a bit in the very beginning of the show, how it was interesting that we didn't have any sentient monster villains, and it was just kind of the ominous presence of Yggdrasil. And it's just been in these last, 10-ish episodes, maybe a little less, that we've even just heard of them. And it's kind of like that thing I mentioned before. It's interesting. Like, it seems like the further we get in the game, we just keep zooming out and to see that the conflict is much bigger than we think. Mm-hmm. Like, we thought, oh, it's just about the beat riders, and then you zoom out, it's about Yggdrasil, and then you zoom out and it's about the overlords. And it's interesting, because even as fucked up as Yggdrasil is, Ryoma's motivations aside, they're sort of trying to save the world, so maybe the overlords are the even worse villains. We don't know what their whole game is. Because when we first met them, they made it sound like they didn't give a shit. And like that they were just having fun. That's what they made it sound like, and they were bored. But now with this whole boss guy, it seems like there's something more going on besides bored now. Some long shit. I'm bored. Let's mess up with these guys' lives. It's like, whatever. It'll be fun. It'll be like a movie. Oh, so much to talk about. I like how we talked Gaim to death, and then we found another topic. Oh, yeah! I want to get inside of the minds of the villains. It's such a rare toku show for me, because even though toku's sort of like one of my main interests, I rarely have a toku show like this where I have such a desire to learn more about the world outside of the 22 minutes I spend watching that episode and discussing it. It's like, I think about it more often than I have many more writer series, so.
Yeah, definitely.
It's about fruit. I can't believe they did that so well. It was like a challenge. We wanted to make a show that's a little bit more with this, the tone we used to have in the older writer series, a little more somber, a little darker twinge to it. What's the theme? Fruit. Challenge accepted.
I find it funny that there's still so many people who haven't watched Gaim or completely write off Gaim just because of the fruit thing. It's like, you guys have no idea what you're missing. Really, like, you have no idea.
I don't understand the people that are mad that how the plot moves, that it's like constantly serialized. Like, they're mad there's not filler. It's like, what? Like, when Brian says, everyone's got their own opinion, but what? That's like some of the stuff I hear about GoBusters. It's like when people say, the GoBusters had no character. It's like, what?
We spent a long time in our GoBusters review episode just talking about the characters.
Yeah. And it's like, I mean, the people that write it off are one thing, but the people that complain because of the pacing being like that? I mean, they can't calm down, they need a breath. I mean, you have episodes like that, though. I mean, there was an episode a couple back when Gaim was testing out those locks and whatnot, and I thought that's their version of filler. It's like, stuff still happened, but it was a little less intense on you. So, I think it's got a pretty good flow. It's not like you got major stuff coming down every episode, but there's always a lot to talk about. Oh, Gaim. Our wrap-up should be spectacular. Can you imagine? The wrap-up will be as long as an episode, considering how long our Gaim discussions are. Let's start from the first.
Or our wrap-up will just be a couple sentences, because we're just so burnt out. Our wrap-up will just be a collection of all of our episode discussions in one episode.
I'm going to write a speech.
Oh, man. Gaim was a fantastic season. One that I adore very much.
Imagine there being an echo. A fantastic season. Came along at a good Gaim in my life.
I think that's probably where we should end our Gaim discussion.
It's always sad that with the exception of when you guys go to Garo, I go from talking about Gaim to Pokemon for 3 seconds. Speaking of, it's time for...
Because now it's time for Ramble time.
Yeah. I was going to say something funny, and then I couldn't think of anything, so I just did an awkward yeah.
Got it.
So Pokemon this week was all about macaroons, but I don't know. I say macaroons. I say macaroons.
That's why Brian was upset.
So someone actually commented on Twitter and said that macaroons and macarons have some similarities but are not the same thing. Is that true?
Oh, I thought they were just messing up the pronunciation.
Wait, what?
That macaroons and macarons are different.
Are macarons
Yeah, they're different. Macarons is a nut. Macaroons is a cookie.
Okay, then they are doing it wrong, because they keep saying macarons, and it is clearly a cookie.
Oh.
So they are fucking up. I knew
but
they were fucking
cookies
up.
Are better. Sorry, just me. If our intelligent guy in discussion, cookies are better. But I thought they were just mispronouncing it through the whole episode.
Oh, wait.
Like,
is it the other way around? What?
It's the other way around, because, god damn it, macaron isn't a nut, it's a different kind of cookie. But something. It's a different kind of something. God, I fucking hate the French.
I hate China.
Wait, like who in the master meeting of food names let it go by that there would be something called macaroons and macarons so close together? Like, it's the same people that cleared bologna. It's like, I want to be at that meeting. Like, there had to be some sort of grand names and stuff meeting where we decided on all this. Like, I want to know. Like, Colonel and all that. It's where... Colonel, I'm thinking of when Dwight came. I was talking about Dwight.
Sorry, I'm reading Wikipedia.
Sue, we've got to get to the bottom of this.
I love how this is the longest Pokemon discussion yet, and it's all about whether or not they used macaron right.
Hold on, it says the macaroon is often mistaken as macaron. Many have adopted the French spelling of macaron to distinguish the two items in the English language. However, this has caused confusion over the correct spelling. Some recipes exclude the use of macaroon to refer to this French confection, while others think that they are synonymous. In reality, the word macaroon is simply the English translation of the French word macaron, so both pronunciations are technically correct depending on personal preference and context.
Well, I think the French are a bunch of macamorons. So
it's the British's fault. Okay.
This is why we seceded. We're like, screw these politics. All this cookie politics. That's why we left. I wouldn't have been able to put up with it either.
Oh,
dear God.
Right, we succeeded.
Well, this is why. It's what happened. It's like all this damn politics. And it makes it even more confusing because these shows have a tendency to make up weird names for food. Like, remember Digimon? Rice balls were donuts?
Yeah, Pokemon did that too. Yeah.
That was the first thing I thought of when Coda offered Bravo the rice ball. I'm like, oh, look, it's a donut.
I think one time, in one episode, there was in Pokemon, there was a rice ball, and they didn't want to have to call it a donut. This was after switched to the Pokemon company after it left 4Kids, and so they digitally put a sub sandwich over the rice ball and called it a sandwich because they didn't want to have to go through the process of calling it a rice ball.
Well, I hope it wasn't laced with any hard meats.
Why did they would have had an interesting afternoon? Joke's on you. The nacho line was right here all along. Why didn't they just call them rice cakes? That's a thing. It's not uncommon. Stupid people. God, all this food politics getting in the way of stuff.
Regardless, it was a boring episode.
Yeah, all it was about Chespin picking out on macarons.
Macaroons.
What else? Was that the only plot? All I remember is Chespin just eating.
That was it.
Because he ate all their food, and then he found an old lady and ate her food, and I thought she was going to eat him, like, whatever the witch was called from Hansel and Gretel. She was like, oh, get in my belly, or what? I don't remember the story.
And then he keeps making macaron runes, whatever, and then this lady's making them. Like, what is this the only food in this world?
In this episode? And then she's like, hey, now that you're fat, do you want to battle for me? My husband's got a... what's it called? Delphox? There we go. And so that was weird. I thought she was going to have it, because I just kept thinking she was a witch, so it made sense. And she had it. And then the husband's like, oh, I'm pappy! And I'm like, oh, you got it. And then Bill... not Bill... Wait, what's this guy's name? The guy with the glasses.
Why can't you remember Clement?
I don't know. I'm sorry. But he almost left Chespin behind Ash style. Like, he was like one step away from starting to run with tears flowing down when he tried to leave Pikachu. It's like, he's better off because he can eat more on that bench. Just go. This was an episode. Oh, Pokemon. Meanwhile, in Japan, Ash finally got to his second gym badge a little while ago. Week or two ago.
He just got to it.
Well, think about how long it took us
to
get there.
That's true.
So it's realistic.
That is true.
And Kevin still hasn't gotten to it, so... Oh my god, if he hasn't, that's amazing. That Ash got there.
Ash wins.
He's racing Ash. Yeah, because it was a week or two ago, I think, he finally got there. He won, obviously.
Really?
Really. But yeah, that was stuff this week. Pokemon. Ben 10 was crazy this week. Zombozo's back. What? No. I actually didn't watch the rerun, but that I saw that was the episode that aired.
So are they basically just starting collecting monsters all over again? Or?
Yeah, essentially. I don't know how long the hiatus will be this time. See, this is why the Power Rangers fandom shouldn't complain. Not only is summer hiatus a common practice, but shows like Ben 10 and Turtles deal with the most random schedules. Mm-hmm. They go off of air without warning and come back, usually without warning unless it's like a special event. I mean, they'll have ads for it, but it's like, it kind of takes you by surprise unless you're directly following online stuff or your Kiefer, which he just updates you. Like, you just have to have a guy named Kiefer who tweets TMNT stuff. So, but it's a much superior setup. I mean, it's a long hiatus, but not really, because it's not falling skies, but at least you know exactly, roughly exactly, when it's going to happen.
Yeah, that's my only biggest complaint right now is that I don't mind shows taking a break, but when they happen so haphazardly, like Ben 10 and TMNT, it just gets really irritating.
Yeah.
You have to keep an eye on when these shows are coming back, or just hope your DVR catches it.
Yeah, and, you know, especially with TMNT, because Saturday, if I'm home, I'm usually watching stuff in the morning, so if I happen to forget that it's back, I'll more than likely catch it, because I'm watching Pokemon. But TMNT, because its schedule bumps around between Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, if they come back suddenly and we're not thinking about it, I miss that more often than not. So, you need to get their chiz together.
Yeah, because, I mean, and I don't... If I'm not watching those shows, I don't regularly watch either network. So it's not like I can catch a commercial going like, oh, new Ben 10 this Saturday or TMNT returns Sunday. I don't see that. So I have to resort to Twitter telling me when this is going to happen.
Yeah, Kiefer, get on top of it. No, I'm just kidding. Speaking of, how great are like Kiefer's old tweets of the podcast? Like, you said there's a bunch I don't remember, but there's some I do. I remember the What is a Kamen Rider? A Beetleborg? I remember that. Because it's also true. They're basically just Beetleborgs. There's another one. Yeah, I don't remember a bunch of them, but it sounds like us because it's nonsense.
Yeah.
But I love that he actually goes back and listens to that and apparently is like way over listened to the 90s episode. But yeah, that's always entertaining and it kind of brings me back to it. Good times. Those old... like RR&RR's of VR Troopers and Beetleborgs were the best. We watched a bit of Beetleborgs, but like VR Troopers, I couldn't handle it, so we just looked at pictures and talked about it. That's how we review a series. Linkara watches it over like 5 years and takes notes, and we look at pictures on like the Ranger Central sites and point and laugh for like an hour and make up stories.
Well, at least that's how the old us, or the old you. I wasn't there.
That's true.
Yeah, I was reading some of his tweets, and I'm like, you know, I was a like listener at this point, and even I don't remember any of this shit. Like female daughter, like which I kind of want to know what episode that's from because that's kind of hilarious.
He had just a normal female daughter.
God, we're weirdos. I just realized the other day that I was thinking about how we're coming up on the 5-year anniversary that Aerosol's been here over a year now. I didn't realize that. We didn't even throw him a party. Like office style.
As an official member? Almost a year.
Yeah, it'll have been a little over a year in a few weeks since we've unofficially, but officially you were in the openings in season 4, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I was like, dang. Time flies. Otherwise it would just be Brian and I mumbling. Wonder what that's going to be like.
Wink. I don't know. We should find out.
Let's start working on a science project of some sort that could get us there. Okay, we're getting weird now.
I'll build an invention Clement style.
Damn it, Brian. You're getting too teasy. It's not even a word. Anyway, speaking of teasy, TMNT, we had a better segue before I started talking about the podcast, but it was a really fun episode this week.
It was.
There was a lot of funny lines, like, Mikey, I don't want to go back to the 1980s. I don't want to go to medieval times. That was great.
I love the, guys, we've seen the future. It's LARP.
Actually,
I thought it was amusing.
I feel like this week, or this week's episode is kind of like when we want to talk about a sitcom, and we end up just boiling down and be like, hey, that was funny, but I don't remember what he said. And I always feel the need, like, I want to have a notepad with me when I'm watching TMNT to remember things Mikey said, because there was a couple other good lines that he had in this episode that I really thought were funny, beyond the medieval times one, but I can't remember what they are now. Oh, man. Somebody help.
But yeah, I thought it was an amusing episode. I mean, I'm a big D&D fan, so I enjoyed that aspect of it. They didn't get too steep into it, but what they did was amusing. I'm trying to look it up now, but I could not figure out who was voicing the owl.
People kept talking about it like they knew who it was. I had no idea.
It was Pee Wee Herman.
Oh.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Why did they just say that?
Not who I was expecting.
You never expect Pee Wee Herman, let's be honest. I thought I'd have more to say about it. Turtles is back. Let's just sit here and it's funny.
It was a fine episode. There wasn't a whole lot that actually got accomplished, but it was amusing. I have no issue with it.
It was more or less just a throwaway episode, but like it wasn't bad.
I mean, it really is a downtime episode. Mm-hmm. I mean, the whole premise of it is the fact that the turtles are relaxing by playing a game. That's the whole point of the episode. So obviously not a lot is going to happen.
I just wish I remember some of the funny jokes in it, because there were some good bits. I really do need to have a notepad. I remember Parks and Rec jokes better.
The most I remember is Mikey just kept mentioning that damn ring.
Oh, yeah. And he's like, my awesome, instead of my precious. Oh, yeah, that was funny. I forgot about that part. But yeah, it was fun. It's going to be on again next week, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay. You never know with this show.
Next week's supposed to be the one where Stockman turns into his fly.
Oh, okay.
Is that the one? I thought it was a different one. But okay.
Maybe not. Cool. Lisa's back. I could swear at one point Turtles came back for one episode and then went on hiatus for a couple more weeks, so it's very hard to keep track. I want Korra to come back. That's really unrelated, but come on. I'm really hoping that, I mean, they said it was going to be a quicker turnaround than or between 2 and 3 than 1 and 2, so I'm hoping that means it's summer. I suppose fall would still be a quicker turnaround, but I really want something to watch over the summer.
When did Korra start last year? Was it in, like,
was it fall? It was fall, so it would be a year, essentially. But it was, it originally started in a summer, so it had been, like, a year and a half since between 1 and 2 or something like that, I think. Because I remember...
Well, hell, it originally started in...
April or May?
April, so...
But we had it during the summer. Because Brian and I, like, just finished Avatar. And we were, like, 3 episodes late to starting it or something like that. And I remember watching it into the beginning of summer. So we've obviously passed April now, or we're almost about to. See, April's from TMNT. It all ties together. It's all connected. No, but I hope that it would premiere in maybe a month or two. That'd be awesome. I have a bad feeling it'll be fall, though, just because I want Korra to watch during the summer.
I'm really looking forward to it. Like,
yeah, me too.
So much cool.
I know.
It's not even a sentence.
Korra, it's so much cool. Well, but at least to get ourselves by in the meantime, we can watch The Last Airbender movie and watch The Adventures of Aang. Should do an episode on that.
Did you want to talk about Arc 5?
Sure. Is his name Yuya?
Yuya.
Yeah, so he got eaten. I mean, killed. He ate something and then he got killed. No, but he won.
I get it. Horribly delayed, I'm sorry.
Well, I was wondering, because when I was talking about Yuya during the Gaim discussion, I'm like, wait a minute, isn't that the Yu-Gi-Oh! Protagonist's name?
Oh, okay, so, I get it.
Yeah, see? This is like the fucking intense thing, but now you know what it's like to be me, just being really slow all the time. But anyway, yeah, he won against Jerkface guy. I was kind of hoping that he would have won without using the Pendulum Summon in any way.
Yeah.
I mean, he did in a way, because he stole it back in the duel, and he maneuvered things cleverly, but I kind of hoped that we would have seen he had a strategy outside of it, and, you know,
yeah.
And without it.
I mean, I do agree, and I thought that for most of the duel, he actually was pretty... I don't know the words. He was pretty good. Like, he was thinking on his feet, and he was using, you know, all these different low-level cards to kind of counter this somewhat uber combination that his opponent had, which I always really like seeing in Yu-Gi-Oh! When, you know, the main character or just any character can kind of think on their feet and use, you know, just the scrap cards that they have to kind of overcome their opponent. So yeah, I do agree that I would have liked to see him win without the Pendulum Summon, but I do at least like how far he got.
Yeah.
Because it does at least make Yuya seem competent.
Yeah, his personality is still a little hard to read right now, but at least in terms of dueling, I like that he's a fairly competent duelist, but he's not like, you know, this like godlike character that can't seem to lose like Yugi when he would transform into a Tem or even sometimes Jaden or Yusei. So, but I like that sort of balance, at least I have in terms of skill. But they did have one of those cards, which was a good example of like a far-reaching situation in which he would have a card like that in his deck, which was he could take control of two cards on the field. His opponent's field effects were negated. There's like the chances of that happening. Like, because more often than not, the cards wouldn't be on the field that long if they're deactivated for being destroyed or something. So that was a pretty, you know, lucky draw card.
I mean, that was really just to give him an excuse to get the cards back more than anything else.
I mean, because everything else was fairly clever, but a lot of them is kind of maneuvering the situation so that they can keep the duel last. But still, that was a really good example of it. I always wonder, like, what that's like in the writing room, because they have to plan out these duels. Like, it's not like Pokemon where they could be like, Pikachu uses Iron Tail and the other Pokemon fucking faints. It's like, they have to plan out, like, what cards to use, how the rules work, what kind of rules they're using, and, like, how to stretch this out for X number of episodes, like, precisely down to the life point, gaining and losing. So, that must be quite a chore.
It is kind of cool, though, like, with the exception of those occasional asshole cards, like the one we saw in this episode, most of the duels, you know, are legit duels.
They're all real cards.
They actually do abide by the rules, and it is kind of impressive. It's like, you guys have to think in so many different ways to actually come up with this scenario. It's interesting. It's neat.
Yeah, and even though there are, you know, like you said, pull out of your ass cards, they are real cards. It's just, like, thinking about when I used to play, like, I would see a card like that and would think, there's, like, a 5% chance of this happening, if that. So I'm not putting this in there.
And it's, like, it's rare that people would ever even put those cards in.
Yeah. So, but I want to see, like, a documentary on that or something. So I'm curious, like, how they do it. I think they've gotten better at it as the years go by, considering the original series, the first season, they played by those weird rules. And then later, the duels in the original series really dragged. Like, now you'll still get episodes, like, even in 5Ds, where they would have a little bit of dragging. But the duels happen much quicker, like, GX on. And, but in the original series, like, back when I was in that Yu-Gi-Oh! Kick, when I was watching 5Ds, I caught an episode of the original series on, like, Nicktoons or whatever, and I forgot how slow they were. Like, Kaiba would set a card and then talk for, like, 5 minutes, and then they would cut to, like, the B-plot of Joey doing something somewhere else, and then come back, and he would end his turn, Yugi would draw, and then back to Joey with the B-plot. I'm like, oh my god, I'm gonna lose it.
That is the benefit of having series that aren't based off of manga versus ones that are, because the, you know, the first Yu-Gi-Oh! Series is based off of a manga, so they actually have to kind of slow the anime down so they don't overpass the manga, which happens numerous times. Like, I always see the people who bring up the filler arcs where it's like, why are we going to this place in the middle of the battle tournament? Like, this doesn't make any sense. Why is Joey a monkey? Not Joey, Tristan. But
that was a really awkward placing.
Like, a lot of it's just done to, like, they are deliberately slowing it down because there's only a finite amount of content that they have to work with. But yeah, I do agree. Like, it is much better now where they don't have to worry about any of that, and they can just kind of, you know, work at a faster pace.
Yeah.
And I do have to mention, like, the whole thing we were talking about with kind of playing out these duels and, like, thinking up how these scenarios go. That is another thing that is kind of trumps the original series, because in the original series, they weren't real cards at that point. Like, in the manga, when he was writing it, he could just make up whatever he wanted and it was a card. There you go.
That's what the first season was essentially like. It gets a field power bonus because I'm wearing blue. It's like, oh, cool.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's actually more impressive now to see the staff of writers figure out all these duels because they are now bound by the rules of the game and all of these actual cards that, you know, actually exist, as opposed to, let's just make up whatever we want.
And it's funny, like, when the guy in the episode was making fun of Yuya for using these weak cards, he's like, only has zero attack points. It reminded me of, like, back in the original series when they called Karibo the weakest monster in the game, even though there's actually cards with lower attack points now. And probably then, and Karibo actually has a pretty decent effect. But anyway, it's that usually with those type of cards, there's an effect. And a lot of times it's a really long effect. It's like ridiculous ones now. They have, like, they added an entire new box in this year, I guess. But it's just funny that, like, that was reminding me so much of the original series, whereas now there's an actual effect on it. Which you can see in the Japanese version. Here we still have those just picture and numbers. So you just have to take their explanations for effects on faith in the American version. But yeah, as far as episode goes, it was pretty decent. You know, he won. He kind of made a show of it at the end, which kind of gave me a mixed vibe of him breaking the fourth wall. Like, I felt like he was talking to us, and I felt like they're also subtly using it as a way to teach about the card game. Maybe it was just me, because he was like, "Oh, because of this effect, how many life points does he lose? What do you think, Blue?" So that, I'm not sure if that's entirely the intention or not, but
that, you know, that is probably a good way for them to go about it. The whole him putting on a show thing, because he had an audience then.
Yeah.
But yeah, I guess it is kind of weird now that I think about it.
because he would look at the camera and reminded me of Blue's Clues. I'm like, I don't know if this is worse and more demeaning than the Zexal thing or not. I mean, but I kind of get it in a way. Because if you don't know about it, the card game is pretty complicated in a lot of ways. So I can definitely get wanting to sort of explain it to new viewers a little bit. But it just seems like it's only been the past couple seasons they've been doing it. But it didn't bother me that much, just because it's part of his whole bit.
Yeah.
But I'm interested enough, and the same as last, this episode didn't turn me off or anything. I'm interested enough to keep going and see where it goes from here, because it's barely started.
I do have to say, I don't know why this just dawned on me in this episode, but there's a ridiculous amount of characters.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he's got this whole entourage of kids falling around, and it's like, you know, I don't even know any of these kids' names.
Neither do I. Well,
care about any of them. Like, is the chubby kid who dances really going to be a pivotal role in this series? I really doubt it.
Yeah. Zexal had a lot of people, too, that I remember just kind of following around. And, like, they would get random characters like that glasses kid or the cat chick, which I thought were one-offs, and then, like, stayed. And then on top of, like, all the people you have following him around, you have, like, the people at his school, like the teacher guy, and then you got, like, the villain people that are in the shadows, and then the bully guy from this episode. I don't know if he's going to be around at all anymore, but there's a lot of people to follow very fast.
I'm really hoping he doesn't become the rival.
Oh, yeah. He had some, like...
Huh?
I was going to say he had some really obnoxious villainy expressions in this episode.
He's just not that interesting.
Yeah.
And honestly, his design seems kind of crappier than the others for some reason. Like, whenever I see him move or talk, it's like, this looks like really bad animation. I don't get it. Because it's... The others, like... you know, actual aesthetic of the show aside, they don't look like they're being done poorly, but this guy for some reason stood out to me. It's like, I don't know, this doesn't look that good.
Yeah, some of his like overly animated faces just looked really strange too. But, you know, it's funny, with so many characters being introduced at once and like the first four episodes, kind of reminds me of Danball Double. But that had an excuse because it was already building off a cast of characters from a previous series and it was adding new ones. So while there was a lot of people, you sort of could keep up a little bit. But, you know, actually a better example is Wars. There was a lot of people to keep track of. I still don't remember like 75% of their names.
That's the show I thought you were going to bring up. And then you're like, Double.
I forgot about Double. I mean, the Wars, because I was thinking how many people Double had, but you kind of knew everybody because they introduced it over time. Poor Wars. There's so many people in there, I forgot about the show. That's what happens.
A lot of them really didn't do anything.
Yeah, true. And then you have another character being introduced at the end, the little lollipop blue-haired kid who wants to be a mentor or whatever. Mentee.
Apprentice.
Yeah. Well, mentee is a weird word. It's like a mantee, but I don't know where I'm going with that. Stop me. Brian's supposed to stop me when I get like this, but he just lets me keep going. I really don't have too much else to say other than I was kind of disappointed the duel was a little more kind of standard as opposed to the moving around, which I don't mind that they do that to sort of give you that, because I like watching the sort of normal stand next to each other duels sometimes, but I kind of wanted just to see a little bit more of the action duels just since it's so new.
I hope we see a little bit more of it in the coming episodes.
But it's a pretty good format, I think, they have, because, you know, 5Ds would do riding duels, and then you would have them being on foot or in the city, and they could do regular duels. But with that whole setup, it's pretty well set up that they can have an action episode like last time and then have them just standing across from each other without having to worry about what their location is. I mean, you know, for like riding duels or on foot. But I just hope to see more of it. The last note is that frog monster with the top hat, like Flip Frog or whatever, is like my favorite thing ever. I don't know why. I just thought it was amazing. It's just like his monsters are so ridiculous, but I was like, the thing is just adorable. All of his things wear top hats. I think that's about it. That's it for Ramble Time shows too, isn't it?
Yep.
Damn.
I guess... Now it's time to end.
And somebody do something.
I didn't know what we were doing after this.
Final thingies.
Okay.
Final thingies.
I guess that's where you put an MP3. Okay. Final thingies, MP3. So, that's where it'll go. That's going to be... The new final thingies for season 5 is going to be, duh, you heard the teaser right here.
Just get an MP3 of banjo saying, duh.
But anyway, all the typical stuff. Keep sending in your submissions for the caption contest. Keep an eye out for any random you know, your thoughts, questions for next week or whatever, all that good stuff, and keep on keeping on and stuff.
Yeah.